course I am. Our next case for this morning is Aguilar Mejia against Holder. And we will hear from Mr. Katz.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, there are three principal ironies that I believe help highlight the issue before the Court today. And the first is, ironically, today we follow the day on which we honor one of our nation's most fervent human rights activists. And this is an individual who dedicated much of the initial part of his career to holding our government to abiding by its 1954 Supreme Court decision to order schools to desegregate. Another ironic aspect of today is that in preparing for today's hearing, I came across a quote by Judge Rovner of the circuit in which she described her years of dedicated public service as being motivated by having myself survive the Holocaust. I came to know in a personal way how critical the rule of law is. And Mr.
Katz, I mean, you're not going to get any argument from any of us about how important that is. But I think the problem here, there are a couple of problems here. One is, what do we really have authority to hear? You know, kind of where underneath it all is the legal issue? And maybe even a bigger problem, if, as I read the immigration judge's opinion and the BIA's opinion, I think there's a great deal of sympathy for Mr. Aguilar's illness. It seems to me quite possible that if he has to go back to one of these countries, he won't be able to get the medical care he needs, and it could be fatal for him. I mean, those are terrible facts. And yet the legal arguments that you're making are about withholding of removal. They tend to be about persecution. And so matching up what seems to be the tremendously strong humanitarian problem he's facing with the law is not easy. Now, there is a statute. Part of the immigration laws does allow the Attorney General even to give humanitarian relief. And I don't know if Mr. Aguilar is pursuing that or not. But I think that the immigration judge and the BIA just didn't see the right match between his problem and the statute.
This is the third irony that I was going to mention, Your Honor. It speaks precisely to this point that you're raising, which is that there's a case, namely Banks, cited by both the appellee and the appellant in this matter, which speaks to the application of the precise rule of law which is before this Court today, and that is the Code of Federal Regulation, which instructs the immigration judge on precisely how, and instructs generally the agency, how the agency is to analyze withholding of removal and asylum claims. Interestingly, the language is almost identical in, this is section 1208.13b for asylum and 1208.16b for withholding of removal.
Right, and this gets to your, I guess it's really your attempt to refute the Attorney General's argument that you didn't exhaust, I mean, when I say you, I mean your side, I'm not trying to be personal.
Sure.
That you didn't exhaust the individualized determination argument, because it does seem that is not really raised before either the IJ or the BIA, and your response has to be, well, it wasn't up to us to do that. They had to do it on their own.
I believe, Your Honor, that it was raised, and in fact the standard for...
How is it raised before the BIA?
It's raised before the BIA, Your Honor, because the brief specifically speaks to many of the individual characteristics of Mr. Aguilar in being the principal component of the argument for withholding of removal that Mr. Aguilar was presenting before the immigration judge, and then again as well before the Board of Immigration Appeals. The
Do
fact
you think
that
they just should have inferred from the mention of these individual characteristics notion that he wasn't confining himself to a pattern or practice claim?
Well, the law, Your Honor, provides precisely just that. In Hamdan, a Seventh Circuit opinion, the court ruled that so long as an immigration practitioner makes some effort, however insufficient, to place the board on notice of a straightforward issue being raised on appeal, a petitioner is deemed to have exhausted all administrative remedies. That is this court's ruling, Your Honor, and it is precisely applicable to the case at bar because above and beyond this, we have an administrative regulation which orders, there's shell language, again, in this administration, which orders the agency to perform a particular methodology of analysis. And that is to consider, and this is precisely what the immigration judge did not do, it is to consider and to properly apply the law in considering whether there is a more than likely chance that as a result of persecution, the applicant for withholding of removal will suffer loss to loss of life or other such harm. That is the language of the regulation. It specifically instructs the immigration judge and the agency to do that, Your Honor. And it also contains language which says that the immigration judge shall not require the applicant for withholding to show individualized characteristics if there exists what in the case law has been referred to as per se persecution against a particular group or group persecution. Now, just because a litigant may speak to and may present that argument to the court that there is per se persecution does not mean that it is not legal error for the agency to disregard individual characteristics of the applicant simply because that argument is raised. That, you know, that's not the way our system works.
Where's the shall language? I mean, I see the shall not language, and I don't think anybody's arguing that that wasn't complied
absolutely
with.
Absolutely. There's shall language in two parts of the regulation. The regulation, if we look at the beginning part of the regulation, it states that evidence...
Which subparagraph?
Sure. It's at the very beginning. It said the evidence shall be evaluated.
So this is 208.16b.
It's the sentence right before B1,
That's what you're talking about.
Right. If I can.
All right. It's at the end of B right before subparagraph 1 or subparagraph 1. The evidence shall be evaluated as follows.
Precisely. Okay. And
So what you're saying is that basically imposes if you will, a self-executing responsibility on the immigration judge, even if the issue isn't sort of squarely hitting him between the eyes.
Precisely, and that's exactly what this court's ruling in Banks says.
Well, Banks is about the other half of it, though. Banks is about the shall not, I think, isn't it?
Well, what Banks says, Judge, is that if the statute says that the judge shall not look at individualized characteristics of the shall not require the applicant to produce individualized characteristics if they show a per se persecution, but Banks goes beyond that to say to speak to the judge's responsibility in response to these questions you just presented to follow the statute as Your Honor just said that there is a sort of above and beyond normally what we require of the judiciary in this matter. Of course, we're dealing with it with an administrative judge, but in this matter, we're talking about what the law specifically requires that judicial body to do. And Banks certainly speaks to the general aspect of how our judiciary functions, because Judge Easterbrook, in that opinion, goes on to address the Social Security Administration. And he says the Social Security Administration makes sure that it consistently follows the law by applying consistent standards and having indeed individual experts that the government itself brings in and not sort of default requiring the immigration judge, as happens in these asylum withholding cases, to be a mock expert or a pseudo-expert, but to have consistent application of the law. The Social Security Administration has ensured consistent procedures and even the government's own experts. We don't have that here. Here we have an immigration judge again, the bank's opinion, certainly sympathetic to an individual who's overworked, has a tremendous caseload here, but we have an immigration judge who simply misapplies the law, who simply refuses to follow, or not refuses, but again, refuses
to. He's being told over and over again that this guy is in the group of perceived homosexuals, this guy's in the group of HIV/AIDS sufferers, and no one points him in the direction of the individual theory.
I disagree, Your Honor. Respectfully, there is repeated through both the affidavits. There's a 15-page affidavit that is Exhibit A in the withholding application that was provided by Mr. Aguilar's caseworker, Alyssa Eugenie, that spoke tremendously to all of the specific aspects of Mr. Aguilar himself. We presented several witnesses during that proceeding, Your Honor, who spoke to specifically how Mr. Aguilar's, namely, one of the main aspects here is that he suffers from PML, a disease, an age-related disease, which causes debilitating mental harm. That's a characteristic that we repeatedly, in all of the pleadings, in all of the arguments, up and through to today, have spoken to, together with his suicidal attempts. He was beaten up by gangbangers. Clorox bleach was forced down him in this beating. That is something, you know, he has attempted to commit suicide. These are very particular characteristics of our applicant for withholding of removal that we have consistently presented throughout the litigation that speak to the fact that our applicant is somebody who absolutely will be much more likely to suffer from the sort of harm that the persecution in these countries, namely a lack of medical... Okay.
Yeah. We get the point. But thank you very much. We will hear now from...
Okay, Judge. Thank you.
Bless.
Good morning. My name is Jesse Bless. I represent the Attorney General. I want to start briefly on work backwards. I want to start with the last point that we made about what the IJ did in this case. The IJ did what Banks told him to do, which was be responsive to the client. Be responsive to the person who is submitting a claim before you. He asks him at the end of the testimony, which he heard many on page 306, he asks the attorney, which is a different attorney that we now have today representing Aguilar. He says, let me get this straight. For withholding of removal, you're submitting a patent and practice claim against homosexual men with HIV in these countries. That is exactly our argument, was the response. That is exactly our argument.
But let me back up a little bit, because I'm concerned that the government's position, in fact, creates some kind of logical conundrum for applicants. Because in order to be eligible for relief at all, you have to show that you're a member of a certain kind of group, religion, social group, et cetera, et cetera. And so your group membership is certainly relevant, but just because you're a member of a group doesn't mean you're necessarily showing that your basis of removal or your effort to avoid removal is limited to pattern or practice. You could certainly say, yes, that's our claim, meaning that's a claim that we're raising, without meaning that you are not raising a claim that your individual applicant isn't also asserting that because he or she is a member of this kind of one of those five protected groups, that's necessary but not sufficient to get relief under the statute. But you're one of those, you know, HIV/AIDS sufferers or perceived homosexuals or whatever, who is going to suffer persecution, even if maybe some other members of your group are not going to suffer persecution. So I'm afraid the government is conflating group membership with necessary pattern or practice, and then they're saying to Mr. Aguilar that he can't prevail.
No. Well, I would disagree. I would say that there is much testimony presented. Nothing identified a specific threat to Aguilar individually. We're not talking about his individual characteristics. That went to his definition of the social group. That's where his individual characteristics were important.
But his vulnerability, surely there is such evidence, since he's got this. I mean, in fact, the government's brief trivializes this disease that he has that eats up the white matter of the brain. This is a fatal disease. It's untreated.
If I made that point, that wasn't my intention. My intention was to really give full faith and to really the humanitarian aspects of the agency's decision. I don't take a position. I certainly don't trivialize it, and I'll take exception to that. What I was trying to do was lay it out, and in fact, the major point here was that the agency considered what was before them. And if the agency had gotten it wrong, because on appeal to the board, again, we have the attorney for Aguilar say there's only one issue presented. Did the immigration judge incorrectly find or not find a patent practice of persecution? That would put the board on notice of the one issue. Well, if they had gotten it wrong, they could have filed a motion to reopen.
If the board has read its own regulation, though, they should realize that, that this is not a purely adversarial process any more than the Social Security laws are, as we said in Banks. And if they should have looked at his individual case, perhaps they would have seen a risk to him, vulnerable as he is mentally, vulnerable as he is physically, to persecution. There's plenty of evidence that homosexuals are treated badly in any of these three potential countries.
And they were responsive to that claim. There was no evidence presented that anyone was going to specifically target Aguilar any more than anyone within that group. And believe me, I'm not trying to minimize here. I'm just trying to...
And here's where I'm saying, when you just... It's the bottom of page 6, the top of page 7, when you... actually, inadvertently, probably misspelled leukoencephalopathy, but you call it a disease that causes clumsiness, speech and vision problems, memory loss, and even personality changes. Reading that, you would not know that this is untreated, that this is fatal very quickly.
I was quoting. I didn't make that up. I don't know about these diseases. That's not my job. I'm just trying to take things from the record that shows how dire the situation was, and if I didn't do a good job of that, I apologize. But the major legal arguments here is that that's not the job of this court. It's the job of the agency, and if the agency isn't put on notice, some way, then this court should not review it, because that's a statutory jurisdictional preclusion. And if a new attorney had come across the scene and acted as a Monday morning quarterback and said, wait a minute, we should have made more of an individualized claim, they could have filed a motion to reopen. Well, and that way, I mean, because here's what they're asking.
Well, wait a minute. I just want to point out that counsel for Aguilar Mejia said to the IJ, his degenerating health situation will make him a more vulnerable target, which will make it more likely that he will face this persecution. And then a few minutes later, counsel says, the respondent is essentially in a childlike state in many ways, which, coupled with his HIV/AIDS status, et cetera, all of these things make it more likely than not that the respondent will be targeted for violence if removed. And so there are statements made in this record that do seem very specific to why this guy is going to be worse off than even other members of his group.
But I think that testimony alone doesn't speak to the statute. I mean, they want to talk about the individual.
The IJ being alerted to the fact that there is an individual here in front of him, not just a group member.
And again, I go back to 306 in the record where the IJ wants to clarify, because this is a large hearing. This is a large hearing with many witnesses. And he goes back to the attorney and says, please, let me make sure I'm getting this right. Are you making a pattern practice claim? And to use the word exactly, and then to go before the board and say, we only have one issue, pattern practice, and then to come before this court and say they were wrong, they didn't do their job, it puts the agency in an unbelievably tough position, because not only wasn't exhausted to them, but now we have someone saying, you know, that asked this court for a remedy when they never even had the opportunity to respond. It wasn't briefed. It wasn't even addressed. And here's another remedy. They could have filed a motion to reopen and said, or a motion to reconsider, and said, agency, we've had a chance to look at this case, and we didn't submit at the time, but you actually erred as a matter of law or matter of fact. You should revisit this. It was not done. And the administrative remedy, I mean, and the remedy that they asked this court to do, which is to remand under the Supreme Court's case in Ventura, shows why the need for exhaustion exists. It's because the agency has responsibility and the expertise to address issues that are presented before it in the first instance. When that doesn't happen, INA Section 242(d)(1) strips this court of jurisdiction from reviewing it in the first instance.
Yeah, it's an interesting question how the exhaustion requirement intersects with non-waivable legal obligations on the part of the agency. Now, you're arguing this isn't one, but there might be some, that the agency has some obligations that it simply has to...
I think Banks identifies a straightforward application of a legal error. And Banks, what the IJ says is, you need to show me specific evidence that you'll be harmed. Now, that's clear contravention. And again, it was preserved. In the Banks decision, the court goes out of its way to say that it was preserved. both before the IJ and before the board. Here, nothing could be further from the truth. There's no way.
Well, there's
and
a
I've
dispute
read it,
about this.
I've
sure.
read it 1,000 times. There's no way you can read the brief on appeal to the board and say the issue was exhausted.
So, Mr. Bliss, the agency does have other, or the Attorney General, as I understand it, does have other authority, if appealed to for humanitarian reasons, to withhold removal.
Well, and the Department of Homeland Security, it's more of we're in this new world now after 9/11 where we have kind of shared functions. Legacy INS has moved over to the Department of Homeland Security, and certainly,
troubling.
I know it's sometimes you guys only see the losers, and you only see what happens on the face of record and pleadings. But there are many things at work. Put it this way: he's not going to be removed if he's in a greater amount of pain or some discomfort. And again, I'm not making representations, but I'm just saying there are a lot of things that can be done outside this. But again, it has to be a cooperative effort. Certainly it hasn't been brought to my attention that Aguilar has contacted the resources within the Attorney General's, purview, or the Department of Homeland Security. What we were talking about here is, and again, I need to make this point, but I don't want to minimize the sympathetic situation. We're talking about a criminal alien who petitioned an immigration judge for withholding of removal. That was all. That's what this case is about. We're not talking about the myriad of other ways that someone can gain relief from removal.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Katz, your time expired, but I will give you 1 minute if you promise really to stay within 1 minute.
I will do my very best, Your Honor. Thank you. I would first like to reiterate the fact that our appellate brief to the Board of Immigration Appeals indeed did speak extensively to Mr. Aguilar's particular circumstance, stating, if Mr. Aguilar is ordered removed to either country, he will more likely than not be targeted and persecuted and consequently miss his required medications, resulting in likely death. That is what we're dealing with, Your Honors. We're dealing with also the absolute requirement that the administrative agency follow its own regulations, which explicitly state, as is reminded in Banks, that the judge has the obligation to hold to introspect, to analyze whether or not the application shows whether it's more likely than not that he or she will suffer this harm and persecution if returned to his country. It requires that. It does not require that the judge ignore that in substitution for a different argument if made by the applicant, which is what is going on in this case. We believe it is patent legal error in misapplication of the regulation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you much. Thanks to both counsels. We will take the case under advisement.